Hello, patrons, and welcome to the third year of patron specials, which is hard to believe. We said this last month, but I think it's time again to say it because it's a fresh year. We're recording this on New Year's Eve, but we're thinking a lot about the upcoming year and kind of what we want to do with the podcasts and things like that. And nothing bad. We're not stopping them. Nothing is happening. But it's just been such a gratifying experience to have the support of everyone that gives us money each month. We're making more than I ever thought we would.
Oh God,
frankly.
Yeah.
And it's tremendously gratifying. So I just want to thank you again all, because why not? So this month we are going to talk about The Last Jedi, or Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, I guess is the official title. And
is it plural? Is it singular?
The Last Jedi?
Yeah, well, you know about the controversy with that. In, like, French, the Jedi was plural. In a couple other languages, it was plural. But, you know, Rian Johnson was just like, no, it's a singular word, so who knows?
I didn't hear about that. I spend very little time
so
on the internet
lucky these
days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been playing Stardew Valley a lot, so that's what I've been doing with my time. I've got like 90 hours into it now. Maybe we'll just do a podcast on Stardew Valley. I liked The Last Jedi, but I just don't know why everyone is acting like it's a real movie.
You know, I think that's a good way of putting it. It was a really good Star Wars movie. It was certainly a damn sight better than Rogue One. I don't know, because I find now I know you're a movie guy, you like movies a lot more than I do. I am not as much, and since most of my time is spent on television, I just can't help but, when I see something like this, I imagine it in my mind as a season of television, and with the room to breathe that a season of television would give, and I guess at this point, I wish Star Wars were a TV show.
Well, what, didn't Disney announce that they were going to do a Star Wars television show?
I know.
I thought that actually was announced when they bought LucasArts a couple years ago.
Yeah, and there was certainly the Clone Wars show, and there's all this EU crap, and, you know, I don't understand
that.
They
were talking about doing a live-action Star Wars television show, which might actually be interesting. I don't know.
Again, there is, I think, a bit of a more focus on the world and on, you know, a bunch of different characters than, for example, the original trilogy had been. And again, I don't really pay attention to the Marvel Creative Universe, but that kind of a thing for Star Wars, if they're going in that direction, yeah, I can see it working with that kind of extra room. But that would mean that the movies would be the really big events in this. I guess this feels like a really big event in the chronology of the universe.
I don't know, though. It already feels kind of rote, though. I mean, I think that in a certain sense, you know, Star Wars was always kind of an outlier in terms of blockbusters, because in a certain sense, Star Wars helped invent the summer blockbuster, along with like Jaws, for instance. You know, those are the kind of the two classic examples of the movies that really invented that genre and that business model, frankly, the business model that has led to the moment in history that we are in right now in cinema, where everything is an interconnected multiverse and movies are planned out 3 and 4 and 5 years in advance. I mean, this is the third year in a row with a new Star Wars movie, and it's already starting to feel a little rote.
Yeah, I can agree with that. It just felt like, you know, okay, here I am checking in with the Star Wars people again, and I don't know, you know, I haven't seen any of the comic book movies. I really watched, like, a little bit of Luke Cage and Iron Fist, you know, while my partner was watching that, and I feel so daunting to get into, and I feel like they're doing that with Star Wars now, with all of these movies, you know, everything is so such a large thing. Of course, Star Wars has always been a very large thing, and comics have always been a very large thing. So, I don't know. It's at the same time rote and slightly inaccessible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, because I think that the Marvel movies are they're just our own crazy thing, and they are doing something that is very, very odd and something that I do not like. I don't like the movies visually. I don't like them artistically. Mm-hmm. They're all sort of samey to me. But Star Wars at least tries to be a little different, and I think Disney is trying to make these movies a little bit of an event. And I think that Star Wars has a built-in advantage in that the episode movies, if you want to call them that, are going to be the ones that are designed to feel like more important and more necessary chapters in the Star Wars movie universe. Whereas movies like Rogue One and the Han Solo movie, which I still can't believe is real. that's coming out in May. It's just kind of getting to the point where it's like, can you please slow down a little bit? We don't need a Star Wars movie every 6 months. And that's kind of the problem I have with The Last Jedi, where it's a fine movie. I enjoyed it. It was entertaining, if a little long, which we will talk about. But to me, I just look at it and I say, I don't know, because, like you said, I'm a film guy, right? So I look at movies in a different way than you do. And what is becoming so obvious and so bewildering to my critical sensibility is I don't understand why these big name directors, directors that have had, a modicum of success in a genre movie like Rian Johnson did with Looper, and how, and Brick before that, of course. Brick was sort of this like cult classic, and that's how Looper got attention. And then he got The Last Jedi, and I don't get it. You get these people that have like a very singular directing style, a very interesting visual style, and then they get sucked into this huge, huge cultural genre force, and it basically they have to subsume their creative endeavor into this thing. And I don't get it. I don't know why they would want to do that.
I mean, I can understand it. I mean, maybe at a little older than Rian Johnson is, like, but I could see getting to a point where, because it's really fucking hard to have a singular vision all the time, right? Like, there's a reason that, there aren't as many auteurs as people who want to be auteurs, if you know what I mean. Like, sustaining that is very difficult. And I think I can appreciate getting to a point where, you're running out of ideas a bit, you're tired, it's a lot of work, and then you get a cushy job on one of the most popular franchises in the world. And, while I certainly don't think it was easy to direct Star Wars, there was a lot more in the way of guidelines for how he had to direct it and where the story had to go. And the Star Wars universe is a universe that a lot of people, have grown up with loving. So it's not like it's a, I don't think it's a punishment to work on it. Like, there is a degree of promoted upstairs that I feel like this. I also think it might have something to do with the fact that, and this is a theme we have talked about a lot on various podcasts, that mass culture is not the thing that it was 10, 20 years ago. And having an indie success is much smaller and tinier in a way, and so this may be the only way you get to go to the mainstream is by directing one of the hugest properties. There's the small indie darlings, and there are, there's the big blockbusters, but there's not as much of a middle ground anymore.
Yeah, I think that's right, but to a certain degree, though, I think that directors like Rian Johnson going to Star Wars, and I'm not necessarily criticizing Rian Johnson, using him as an example, because we're talking about The Last Jedi, of course, that to me it feels like, that one of the things that has been happening in the movie space and the film space over the past, 10, 20 years is that there's very, very little room for the middle budget movies anymore. It's still fairly easy. I mean, I use that term loosely because it's never really easy to make a movie, of course. It's still fairly easy, and it's still fairly there's a marketing path and a business path for indie movies, for movies that cost, say, $10 million, $5 million and under. And there's certainly a business case to be made for the big movies that cost $100, $200, $300 million. But it's becoming increasingly difficult to make those sort of middle movies that cost like, you know, $20 to $50 yeah. million dollars. And Rian Johnson, I think, would be a fine director if he had been around 30 years yeah. ago making those movies. And to me, it's like Looper was kind of a cult hit. It was a critical hit. I don't think it made a lot of money necessarily. And so him going to The Last Jedi almost feels like he's hastening the demise of the type of career that Rian Johnson yeah. should have, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, I get what you mean. If he was going from Looper, then he'd go to another movie that, again, maybe have a bigger budget, but would not be a huge blockbuster, would still be a critical darling, would be something that would, you know, but because there is no middle step, he's, or, you know, gone to step three already.
Yeah, and I mean, I certainly think that, I mean, you know, maybe we should actually talk about the movie a little bit, because one of the things that I think was so weird about the movie is that I couldn't really notice much of Rian Johnson in it. Like, there were a couple of shots that were kind of interesting. It certainly did not ape the visual style of the original trilogy with, you know, like, remember when we yeah. talked about The Force Awakens back in 2015, and I said, God, the wipes, you know, he was yeah. using those camera wipes over and over and over again as a visual homage to the original trilogy. And I saw one wipe in this movie yeah. at the very end. You know, there was a lot of, I think we have to say too, that it's going to be difficult to talk about this movie without talking about sort of the cultural critical backlash around it, because a lot of Star Wars fans were saying, oh, this doesn't feel like a Star Wars movie. Hmm. And, you know, I am very open about the fact that I am not a Star Wars fan. I used to be, but I don't really care about it. And so, like, and I'm not saying that to be mean or churlish. I just, that's no. where I'm coming from. So I don't have any sort of vested interest in this in the same way I would in, say,
the next Star Trek movie.
Star Trek Discovery, for example, and how conflicted I felt about that.
But it's funny, actually, that you bring that up, because both Star Wars and Star Trek are at that point where they are treading a really weird line, because they are both in a period of reinvention, right? Like, it's been, you know, between the prequel trilogy's ending and, you know, The Force Awakens, was roughly the amount of time between Enterprise and Discovery, you know, give or take a couple of years, but like the time frames are very similar. So it, in both cases, it's been a while. We're going back and revisiting this franchise, and it's a new era. We are dealing with, you know, both new cinematic techniques, new ways of watching television and going to the movies, as well as a completely different political situation in both eras. And so we do need to be looking forward in order to, you know, because we need to change with the times. At the same time, these are properties with extraordinary amounts of nostalgia value. And if you completely jettison that, what do you have?
I don't know. And I think that The Last Jedi, that's going to be really the task for the third movie, I think, because, yeah. you know, I mean, Han Solo is going to be gone. Leia is sadly not going to be in the movie, which by all accounts, she was going to feature heavily in.
Yeah.
The person who is helping J.J. Abrams write the script is the same guy who wrote the Justice League script. So I'm not super... Or not Justice League. What was the other one? I don't know. Whatever. Justice League, Suicide Squad, Batman versus Superman. I don't know. Whatever the fuck. Some terrible DC movie. I'm not very optimistic about that. And I don't know. Like, there's a certain point I get to this where I'm like, what is the point of this? What is the point of yet another Star Wars movie? And you certainly could say that about Star Trek. And I think that, I don't know that the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies have much of a point to exist, frankly. Yeah. I don't know what point Star Trek Discovery has to exist yet. And it still has not proven itself in my mind. But I am open to the possibility that it will prove its existence. This new trilogy, it is a bald-faced attempt at Disney wanting to make a shitload of money, and everyone's buying into it. And, like, again, this is a fine movie. I enjoyed it. It was a fun time.
Yeah.
But it's making all of these top 10 lists of critics I respect. And I'm just like, I don't get it.
You know, there is, I mean, one of the big backlashes and criticisms of the first movie was that it was a complete rehash of Star Wars, right? Like, it's just telling the same exact beats. And I had actually found that to be part of the point of the movie. Again, that, you know,
absolutely.
We think we've gotten rid of racism. We've gotten rid of sexism. All that is fine. And now Donald Trump is president. Every single person in Hollywood is a rapist. Like, Charlie Rose has raped all of his staff members. Like, all of this shit is happening. And, you know, our generation is looking at our parents' generation being like, what the fuck? You won one battle and then you said, we're done. And then you crawled back and, you know, you let all this shit fester and now you put it on our shoulders. Like, I found that to be the big part of The Force Awakens. And I thought it was very interesting that it is, I figured, okay, if this, you know, maybe this sequel trilogy, it's called, I guess. Yeah, the sequel trilogy is mirroring the original trilogy and in a way deconstructing it, in a way commenting on it. But Force Awakens was a good comment on A New Hope. I don't think that Last Jedi was a good comment on Empire Strikes Back, and I felt that was a missed opportunity. Yes, it goes
with
I mean, yes, there is some middle volume of a trilogy where, oh, there's, you know, bigger world building and a setback for the heroes at the end, but you know they're going to come back in the third one. You know, that's structure, but it didn't feel as, I don't know, it didn't feel like it was talking about what Empire Strikes Back was talking about, and I wish it had. That would have given it a point.
I mean, I agree with you. At the same time, I don't know if we need a Star Wars movie in 2017 to say what the Empire Strikes Back was saying. And I think that The Last Jedi, you know, I saw the movie maybe 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And
I saw it yesterday.
I joked when I left the theater, I saw it with my brother and I turned to him and I said, so I guess the point of the new Star Wars movies is a commentary on boomers versus millennials. And that basically what you said about The Force Awakens, I think The Last Jedi made explicit, which is, you know, so I guess like the boomers as represented by Leia's generation and Han Solo's generation and Luke Skywalker's generation won this very important war and then just like sat around and, you know, frittered it away. And then the same thing happened again. And now it's up to the new generation to fix things. And I kind of meant that as a joke at the time.
No,
but the more I thought about it, the more I think that kind of is the point. But yeah. I don't know that that was the point in The Force Awakens. To me, because you have to look at this movie in relation to The Force Awakens, mm-hmm. right? And what I see with The Force Awakens is that a movie that has not aged well, a movie that is diminished with repeat viewings. I do not gain anything from repeat viewings of that movie. I've probably seen it 3 or 4 times, and it is a little less each time I see it. It doesn't have anything really surprising or shocking, and it trades on a sort of very, very bald-faced nostalgia that I find kind of boring. I mean, it's not even like objectionable or bad. It's just boring, right?
Mm-hmm.
And It's so obviously a remake of A New Hope that it's almost astonishing. I mean, the Resistance and the Order and basically the entire thing is happening again. There's another Death Star. You know, if you want to go back and listen to our podcast on The Force Awakens, it's still up on the site to see what we thought about it at the time. I think I liked it more then than I do now. But, you know, The Last Jedi to me is a more explicit repudiation of that movie than anything else.
Yeah.
That Rian Johnson at a lot of opportunities took what was established in The Force Awakens and I think called it out for the bullshit it was. I mean, I have to say, like, while I am not a huge fan of this movie, while I thought it was just okay, I think that opening the movie with the resolution of the cliffhanger of The Force Awakens with Rey handing the lightsaber to Luke Skywalker in this like amazing vista, and he looks at it, throws it over his shoulder and walks away without saying a word. I mean, like, I just got to applaud the guy for doing that. Like,
no, I mean, The Force Awakens seemed to end with the understanding that what's going to solve this is the younger generation, you know, confronts the older generation with their failures, and that the older generation is going to swoop in and take care of everything because it's still their responsibility. This one says, no, these are the people who, you know, again, as Stephen King said, could have had world peace but settled for the home shopping network. These people did abdicate their responsibility. They fucked off. They went into exile. They, you know, didn't really care about the institutions that were supposed to save us and protect us. And, you know, yes, maybe we can guilt them into doing some things for us, but at the end, maybe there is still things that we can learn from them. But at the end of the day, they're going to die off. They are past their prime. It's our turn, and it's on our shoulders. We can't, you know, we can't ask for mommy and daddy to save us anymore. It's our time to save ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that, you know, part of it too is that the movie makes it very clear that while Luke Skywalker is a very powerful Jedi, he's perhaps not the best administrator.
Yeah.
And that, like, I mean, you know, I think that's another example. I mean, I could rattle down a list of the creative choices where I did like Rian Johnson pulling the rug out from people. I mean, I think that, you know, having Yoda come back and be the Yoda of the original trilogy and not the prequel trilogy, having him be kind of a senile jackass, frankly, and go, you know what, I don't care, fuck the sacred text, fuck the tree, just get rid of it, who gives a shit, right? Like, that was great. I really appreciated you know, the entire inversion of the Han Solo Poe Dameron thing where he rescues everybody and he gets dressed down by Leia Organa and then doesn't, you know, Laura Dern, the purple haired, you know, admiral, doesn't tell him anything and basically just, you know, it, like, I like the stuff that like that stuff in the movie.
Yeah, but the entire side quest that he sends Finn and the new girl on is disastrous, causes the tragedy at the end of the movie.
Right. And I mean, I know a lot of people did not like the casino plot line, but I thought that was the best part of the movie. Like, it was visually interesting. Mm-hmm. It was dynamic. I loved the character that he was with, whose name I sadly do not remember because I saw the movie 2 weeks ago and we didn't even know we were going to do a podcast on it at the time. So I took no notes.
Rose, I think.
Rose. Yeah. I loved her character. You know, and so I think that there are some really, really interesting creative choices in this movie. And I think that, well, let's talk about Luke Skywalker because Mark Hamill does a fantastic job in this movie. Oh. I think that this is probably his best acting performance ever. And he's not an actor who I would ever, you know, think to say is one of the greatest actors of our generation or anything like that.
But he does what he does very well. And playing Luke Skywalker is something he does very well.
Yes, yes. He does that very well, and he hasn't done it in a number of years, so it's amazing that he was able to go back to that well so easily and to really understand, I think, what an older Luke Skywalker would be like. I mean, essentially, he is Obi-Wan Kenobi now.
Yeah.
Only he has perhaps even done a worse job of things because, you know, I look at Luke Skywalker and I see someone who, again, was very, very powerful, very well gifted in the Force. But didn't really know what he was doing and decided to reestablish the Jedi Order without any guidance knowledge or help or anything. And, you know, essentially really fucked it up. And, you know, I do understand that Kylo Ren, Ben Skywalker, he is being set up in a certain sense as a character whose backstory we think we know. And then again, I think this is another example of Rian Johnson making a really interesting creative choice where Luke Skywalker is the one that fucked up. You know, he essentially like got in his own head and thought he saw something that wasn't really there and that Ben Skywalker wasn't turning to the dark side.
Or even if it was there, could have maybe been solved by massive amounts of counseling and stuff. I mean, he's somebody who sees a troubled teenager who's in his care and decides the way to do it is to slaughter the kid instead of actually talking it out with him and getting him the proper help he needs.
Right. And that's, you know, a very, very strange choice for Rian Johnson to make. I mean, he did write the script as well, so that's why I keep saying Rian Johnson. Yeah. But it works for me. I think because that's the thing. I mean, like, The Force Awakens is a J.J. Abrams movie. It's a shiny facsimile of a better movie that you have seen before. And I say that with all the rancor that I intended, but because I do not like J.J. Abrams.
Do you know any reason why he's doing the first and third, but not the second? Like, why it isn't his trilogy or why, you know, they don't have a different director for each movie? Like, do you know anything about that?
Because he gets bored easily.
Okay.
No, well, he wasn't supposed to direct the third one. Okay. Someone else was directing it, and I guess it went badly, and they called on J.J. Abrams to do it. So that's why.
Yeah, because again, that unevenness seems weird, but continue.
I mean, I think that he's someone who doesn't like to stick with things. I think he's someone who likes to swoop in, do something, and then move on, which is fine.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's very good at what he does. So, but anyway, this is not a podcast about J.J. Abrams. But I think that, like, at every turn, The Force Awakens called on nostalgia, and The Last Jedi, I think, asked the very tough question of, is this actually nostalgia? What is this for? And decides to do something different and new. I'm not going to say fresh, because I don't know if you can do something fresh with Star Wars at this point.
But it does.
Even when you try to do something fresh, like Rogue One, it still feels like, you know, a bad version of a better movie. And I just think that, like, you know, while I don't think the Last Jedi is a perfect movie, it is a good one, and Rian Johnson does make some interesting choices here.
Yeah, I mean, the movie does question there are a lot of characters who question nostalgia and come to the conclusion that nostalgia is bad. They come to it in different ways. You have, for example, Kylo Ren, who says, well, all of this stuff, you know, fucked everything up. We need to destroy everything and start from scratch. You know, and you have Luke questioning, you know, what was the Jedi Order? The Jedi Order was very hubristic. The Jedi Order, you know, led to a lot of problems. And, you know, part of the point of the prequel trilogy is that in the original trilogy, the Jedi were talked up as the best thing ever, and it's such a tragedy that they've... And you see a lot of shitty management in the Jedi Order. At the point of the prequel trilogy, the Jedi have become decadent. The Jedi get into a particular position which creates Anakin into Darth Vader, which creates the situation in which somebody turns to the dark side and creates the Empire, and I think the prequel trilogy doesn't go quite far enough in damning them for that, but at the point of The Last Jedi, you know, Luke is essentially saying it's the Jedi's fault that this all happened. And I guess the question that will remain for the last entry, because at the end of the movie, you know, Rey does have the Jedi sacred text, Rey is going to do something with the Jedi Order. Is this something that could be redeemed? Could we have a good Jedi Order that actually does what it says it does? Or is it always going to fall into decadence? Is power always going to eventually get corrupted?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think what I would add to that is the fact that I think that Star Wars, in a lot of ways, has always been a very, very conservative franchise and a conservative story in its outlook and its philosophy. I don't necessarily mean in its politics, because it has always believed in the great man theory of history. It has always believed and portrayed the belief in institutions that are not egalitarian and that are the exact opposite of egalitarian. You know, the Jedi Order is nothing more than, you know, a space wizard House of Lords, in a sense. And The Last Jedi, in a lot of ways, throws that idea out. You know, I mean, I think that I keep thinking about the last shot of the movie with the, you know, small slave children that are taking care of the space horses, and how they are apparently using the Force, and how they apparently are in the rebellion or in the resistance or whatever the fuck you call it. I also, frankly, do like the fact that Rian Johnson, like, got his wish to throw out the term resistance at the first possible opportunity. And I can just see him watching The Force Awakens, sitting there going, well, fuck this. When I get the opportunity, it's just going to be the rebellion again, because why the fuck are we calling it the resistance? But it does seem to me that The Last Jedi is a repudiation of all of that, and that it is trying to say that, you know, it is an egalitarian order. Power is with the individual. Power is with the average person, not these, you know, decadent institutions that have failed us.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the entire point of saying that, no, Ray's background was actually her parents were just two random nobody. She was, you know, her background wasn't really that she's Luke Skywalker's daughter, or, you know, she is not the descendant of some great lineage that is this foundling who is lost. No, she is exactly what we thought she was, just a random person who spawned on a desert planet, but happens to be extraordinarily gifted in the Force and happens to be, you know, in a very particular situation, call it luck, call it destiny, call it, you know, fate, whatever you want. And, you know, again, at first that seems like, from a storytelling perspective, kind of a letdown because, oh, we were expecting the twist to be, oh, her parents are really, you know, so-and-so, but that the Force is not anything special in a way. It's something that is accessible to and accessible by everybody. It's pretty important.
I mean, that's what I was about to say, is that The Last Jedi seems to really finally, you know, come to terms with and understand the idea that if the Force really is subsumed through everything, and, you know, it's this mystical power that binds the universe together, as all of the Jedi are very wont of saying at least once in every Star Wars movie in existence, that everyone to some degree should be able to use it or sense it or something. And yeah, some people are going to be more powerful in the Force than others. Some are going to be more Force sensitive than others. But at the end of the day, it's like, you know, gravity or something. I mean, everybody is experiencing it, and everybody is able to use it to some sort of to some sort of advantage, you know. And yeah, certainly a lot of people are only going to be able to use the Force to pick up a broom from across the room or something like that. But, you know, certain people like Rey or you know, Ben Skywalker or Luke Skywalker, for instance, are going to be able to do much greater things with it.
Yeah, and there is also an implication of, you know, well, maybe with better Force education, in a way, more people can become more powerful in the Force, right? Like, because, you know, you have in America, people are looking at slaves and saying, oh, well, they were stupid. They, you know, they're slaves because they're stupid. No, they're uneducated because they have not been taught. Once you teach people how to read, they're going to be able to read. Once you teach people how to use the Force, how to become sensitive to the Force, they're going to be able to use the Force.
Yeah. Just an aside, I mean, that you said that. I mean, I read some really crazy statistic. I don't remember, but it was some surprising percentage of Americans they polled believed that slaves were paid. But anyway.
Yeah, they were paid in getting whipped. You know, that was the currency.
But I think that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, you can kind of see, like, when the rebellion wins the next war, because, of course, the rebellion is going to win the next war, that the way forward is to establish, like, a Jedi class in every high school throughout the galaxy, right? Like, it's just going to be like taking Wookiee or whatever, you know, it galactic history. It's going to be a class that you take, shop, I don't know. Well, let's talk about Rey then, because I think I have kind of a different opinion on her than a lot of people. She was gravely miscast.
Okay.
I don't think that Daisy Ridley is up to the job, frankly, of doing this performance. She's fine, but there is a blankness to her performance. There is a lack of engagement with the meat and the emotion of these plot lines that she's in. I don't see her as this great person, and I don't know if that's intentional or not.
You know, I don't like and connect to any of the new characters in the same way I do to the characters in the original trilogy. It's true. At the same time, I was 7 or 8 when I saw them. And so, you know, to see Luke Skywalker, to see, you know, Carrie Fisher, to see, you know, Mark Hamill, to see Harrison Ford, I get a more visceral connection than I do with Daisy Ridley, but similar with John Boyega and Oscar Isaac. So that said, maybe she is one of the, I don't know. I can't tell if she's one of the weaker characters or one of the weaker actresses. Is she just, you know, and maybe it's a question of both. Maybe they just aren't, they don't have an actress who is strong enough to deal with some very meaty material, and so they're not writing her part as meaty as they could. Does that make sense?
I think that does make sense. Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of it is the actress, frankly. I haven't seen her in anything else. I don't know, you know, if she's capable of more. But I just don't think that she's very, I mean, she's fine. She's competent. I mean, there's nothing wrong with her performance, but there's just, she's not a dynamic presence on the screen.
I mean,
and you want her to be.
Yeah. I mean, a perfect example of giving more to the role. The script is trying to go out of its way to, you know, the internet has gone with Finn and Poe as a couple and everybody loves, you know, the two of them. And in fact, the two actors have really taken to that idea, and you can see in their performance they are totally in love with each other, and the script is going out of its way to kind of dissuade that, but it is still such a presence in the movie because of actor choices. In a way, I don't see Daisy Ridley as getting any actor choices that are transcending the material.
Yeah, I don't either, and I think that there's no real subtext to her performance at all. And I mean, even in the scenes with Rilo Kiley, I don't, with that should be really strong and really resonant, yeah, and full of emotion. And I think that Adam Driver is doing a great job. He's such a weird actor.
Yeah,
he's so strange, but he's doing a really fucking good job.
Again,
as he usually does.
It was in the first movie when he took off his helmet and it's this pasty emo kid. I thought, like, this is the, you know, this is who they're casting as the big bad guy, and it is brilliant casting on their part.
It's the best choice. And I mean, I also think that, again, I keep saying, oh, this is another great thing that Rian Johnson did, shitting all over The Force Awakens, but basically just going, this mask shit, nah, this isn't happening. But yeah, I mean, because I mean, like, it seems really churlish of me to do this, but like, let's compare Daisy Ridley to Carrie Fisher. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a shame that she died. Oh.
Every time Carrie Fisher was on screen, I teared up legitimately during the part when she's blown at the bridge. And, you know, I thought, okay, this is how they're killing, you know, Leia off. I was, you know, in tears at the last scene when it's very clear that this is the last time Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher are going to be on screen together as Luke and Leia. I was weeping. Like, that was, oh my God, but.
Yeah, because I mean, like, that reunion scene and every single scene that Carrie Fisher is in, and how she really carried this movie to a large degree, and, you know, how everything I've heard is that the next one was really going to be her movie, which is, you know, a huge shame, because in a lot of ways, the first one was Han Solo's movie, and the second one is Luke Skywalker's movie, and the third one was going to be, you know, Leia Organa's movie. But I just, you know, there's...
She has a... At one point, Snoke praises Rey's spunk, right? Is it? I mean, you look at Carrie Fisher throughout the original movies, and that's a girl who has spunk. She has steel in her. She has, you know, something that is, you know, she's very expressive in those movies. She's very, you know, as deadened by cocaine as she might have been, she is, you know, she is a spunky girl. I don't see that in Rey.
That's the thing. I mean, like, let's spin this out. So the character of Leia Organa was a princess. She was royalty. She was apparently rich. And she used her wealth and influence and power and intellect to wage a guerrilla war against the Empire. And Rey is someone who thinks she's important, who hopes that her parents are important people. That is a very, very strong force user, perhaps one of the strongest in the galaxy at this point. And what does she do? She fucks off and goes and asks for help from Luke Skywalker for most of the movie. And I just think that there's something really weird about that. That, you know, certainly the original trilogy had its issues with Leia and sexism. I am not discounting that, and I will not argue against that. And in fact, I would argue for that. And I think I probably did when we did podcasts on the original movies. But she was still a strong presence in those movies. She still did a lot of really interesting things of her own volition.
And in a lot of ways that volition comes from, again, transcending the script. You know, the Princess Leia in a slave costume in the third movie, a lot of the power of that performance comes from the fact that Carrie Fisher was utterly disgusted at having to wear that costume. And, you know, you can tell that energy is coming through there. I will hope that the third movie gives Rey time to shine, because I think she is still trying to follow other people's paths, right? Like, when she goes with Kylo Ren to see Snoke, I mean, I loved the scenes in Snoke's quarters the best out of the movie. I loved that set design. I loved all of that. You know, that big fight was great. I think she expects the ending of Return of the Jedi. Like, somehow the character has watched Return of the Jedi and is expecting that to happen. Kylo Ren is going to turn. He's going to slay the Emperor, and he's going to be redeemed. And because he is not as old and sickly as Darth Vader was, you know, the two of them are going to go off and, you know, be great and restore the Jedi Order. And it does not happen quite that way. And I think she's very thrown for a loop by the fact that she's, in a way, she's expected history to repeat. And the fact that it's not repeating in quite the same way means she has to improvise, and she has to learn in the next movie how to improvise.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. You know, she is someone who is very reactive in a sense, and she needs to be more proactive. She needs to actually come up with plans of her own and do things. And I don't see a lot of evidence for that right now.
I mean, keep in mind,
we'll see.
In the time frame of the movie, only a couple of months ago, she was just living day to day and fighting to survive as a poor person in a shitty desert planet. So, you know, we can give her the benefit of the doubt. You know, we even saw if there is a time skip in between 2 and 3, you know, we saw the changes in Leia's character between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, right? Like, this is somebody who, you know, originally was very young, very inexperienced, and in between the two movies hunkered down and did a hell of a lot of training and became a very good strategist in between. So,
yeah,
Rey needs to go through a similar actual training period.
I think that's right. And I mean, also, I certainly don't think this is very different from Luke Skywalker, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in a lot of ways, Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker were the least interesting parts of the original trilogy as well. So maybe that's just an homage to that. I don't know. Well, let's talk. Maybe the last thing to talk about before we wrap this up is the length of the movie and how it ties into, I think, the problems with this trilogy in general, which is, you know, Rian Johnson went on the record as saying that one of the reasons why the movie is so long, and this is an extraordinarily long movie, it's 2.5 hours long, 2 hours and 40 minutes long. You know, I missed a couple minutes of it because I had to go up, you know, I had to go use the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 37 years old. that he said that he wanted to give each character their own little arc, their own character arc. And I think that's a fine impulse, but I also think it goes back to your point very early on in this podcast where you said that you were kind of envisioning this as a television series, because you can do that kind of thing in a television series. A movie is not a television series.
And
did we really need a Finn arc in this movie? I don't necessarily think so.
I mean,
I think that the casino stuff with Rose was great and actually served a real purpose in terms of talking about the themes of the movie. But him fighting with, Captain Phasma or whatever her name is, like, that was just fan service. And no, I did not care about it at all. It went on for way too long. And there were at least a couple of points where I'm like, all right, you can cut this. Like, there was no reason for Rey to be walking around that island for like 40 minutes. There were just some things in here which, you know, trim it up a little.
Well, I mean, the Captain Phasma thing, I remember thinking throughout the movie, oh, we haven't seen her, you know. The internet loved her because, you know, she was a relatively, you know, a badass lady stormtrooper. I mean, of course, everybody's going to love that. You know, I was wondering,
I think that people like her too, because she plays a really interesting character in Game of Thrones.
Okay. I don't really know much about the actress, but either way, you know, I thought, okay, well, they'll save that for the next movie. And then literally at that moment was when she appeared and they have this fight and then it's over. And it's like, the movie is at once too long because it keeps going into all of these subplots, and too short because each of the subplots feels very glossed over. I mean, again, in the 15 episode Last Jedi series, Captain Phasma is going to have several appearances. It's going to build her up. It's going to give her more of a character. And, you know, she's going to be consumed with wanting revenge against Finn because he was the one that got away. And their fight is going to feel like, you know, something that's been built up to and something, you know, extraordinary. And it's just kind of there. And that's how I felt about a lot of it. Again, I do find I like television structure a lot better than movie structure.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I mean, I also think that this is not the best example of a good structure of a movie.
And that's
either,
yeah.
You know, and I think that's the case for a lot of these franchise movies. And so, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a really, really strong like hour and 45, 2 hour long movie in here. And it's just hampered by the fact that Rian Johnson apparently did not have enough restraint to realize what was needed to tell the story that this movie wanted to tell and was best at telling, and the fan service plotline stuff that just frankly didn't help the movie very much. And
yeah,
like I don't need, I like, frankly speaking, I don't need to know what Finn's motivation is. I don't care. Like, and
I mean, Finn doesn't need to be a main character in this movie either. He can be a secondary character to Rose. He could be just somebody who accompanies her on her journey, because in this movie, her journey is a lot more interesting than Finn's journey. Finn's kind of development happened in the first movie, and that's over.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think that, like, Oscar Isaac as Poe Dameron, like, he is a legit main character.
Yeah.
He is really good in the performance, and his actions in the movie had a direct relevance to the plot line and the story that this movie wanted to tell of the rebellion getting into the worst circumstances and the most desperate circumstances it ever had, in talking about, you know, the sort of that sort of hot shot,
yeah,
off the cuff sort of stuff doesn't work. And that had a direct relevance to this movie, but most of the other stuff did not.
Yeah, I mean, I took a screenwriting class in college, you know, 15 years ago, and, you know, maybe that wasn't the best, you know, this was just like a random elective I took, and of course there are exceptions to every rule, but one of the things that, you know, the professor did make very clear is that most movies have a very clear main character. You know, even in an ensemble piece, there'll be the lead in the ensemble, and I can't tell whose movie this is. I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you know, and again, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And certainly in a TV series, certainly in all of the Star Treks that we've seen, you know. But, you know, again, Next Generation has an ensemble cast. Picard is the clear lead. But we can still have Riker episodes and we can have Troi episodes. And the same thing on DS9, the same thing on Voyager, you know. There are plenty of episodes where Janeway as the lead of the ensemble is barely in the episode and we're focusing on B'Elanna, for example. But I don't know who the lead is, and therefore the movie doesn't feel like it has a clear focus. It doesn't feel like, you know, Rey doesn't feel like a strong enough presence to carry the movie. And maybe there is the attempt, as you were saying, maybe, you know, Force Awakens was Han Solo's movie, maybe this is Luke's movie, and the next one, you know, unfortunately, was intended to be Leia's movie. But this isn't quite all about Luke's journey, is it? You know? And
no.
So I don't know whose movie this is. I don't know if this is Poe's movie. I don't know if this is Rey's movie. I don't know if this is Rose's movie. You know, at least one of the things about Rogue One is it's Jin's movie all the way. This is about her journey, and these side characters are comments on her, are B-plots to her journey.
Yeah. No, I think that's really right, and I think that's a good place to leave it, because I do think that's true. I don't know whose movie this is, and I think that, you know, while I liked it, while I think there was a lot of really interesting subversions of the Star Wars mythology in it, while I think that it was a much better movie than The Force Awakens, at the end of the day, I don't know whose movie this is. I don't know what the central focal point is, and I'm not really sure why we needed 2 hours and 40 minutes of this.
Yeah, that's why I hate going to the movies. I don't want to sit for 2.5 hours. If I pee, I have to miss something and I can't pause it and I have to stumble back to my seat in the dark. Like, this is not pleasant.
Well, we can talk about that later. I do want to say, though, that if you do want to see a fantastic movie, you should go see Call Me By Your Name. I am not saying this just to Richard, of course. I am saying this to all of you because I saw it last week and I watched it again.
What is it?
This week. It's Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer, who have a romance in the summer of 1983 in Italy. But I mean, like, everything that is wrong with The Last Jedi is right with Call Me By Your Name. And it's such a weird comparison to make. And I'm only making it because Call Me By Your Name is the last movie I watched.
Wait, is this the one with the guy and the much younger guy?
Well, I mean, he's 24. And
okay, then I'm thinking
so
maybe
not
of a
like,
different
you know,
movie.
No,
but
it's not. Yeah, he's not 40 or anything. But like that movie is so interesting because it's almost as long as The Force Awakens. I mean, not quite, but it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes, something like that, 2 hours and 15 minutes. But it needs all that running time. It has a focal point in the character of Elio, played by Timothée Chalamet. And there's a lot of other characters that are peripheral to that, but they all serve his story. And, you know, it's a much better movie for it. And I think that, like, you know, or see The Florida Project or see anything. I mean, I think that, like, all of the critical attention that's getting sucked up by The Last Jedi. And yeah, it's fine. You know, we all like genre movies. I like genre movies. But
yeah, Star Wars is the only thing that gets me to the theater.
There's a whole world of movies out there. And I think a lot of times we talk about these movies because that's kind of the niche that we have found ourselves in. But like, guys, there's a lot of movies out there. Like, go see better movies than this.
Well, I feel that way about...
I think that's my final word on The Last Jedi.
I mean, I feel that way about video games, right? Like, someone sent me a list of the 40 greatest, you know, RPGs, and number one was fucking Skyrim. And it's like, there are other video games that do this so much better. Like, that's just the culture we're in. I mean, it's the culture where we've always been in. The big pop mainstream stuff is what gets the attention, and I don't know if it's quite fair to say that, you know, indie stuff doesn't get attention anymore because, you know, other than pockets here and there, maybe it never did as much. I mean, there's always been blockbusters, you know, whether we're talking about Charles Dickens or, you know, Casablanca. That was not a very popular movie in its day, so bad example. But, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's
yeah.
I think this is just how things go. The big things will get the most attention. The big fish gets the grease.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave The Last Jedi.
A big fish in need of grease.
Thanks once again for your support. We really do appreciate it. And, you know, while we could do this without you, we would not want to. And I guess that's all I'll say.
Yeah.
Richard, would you like to thank them?
We probably wouldn't do this if nobody listened, though. I mean, certainly we wouldn't have been doing it. No.
Well, I meant in terms of financial support. But,
well,
you know.
Yeah, that's fair. I liked the opportunity to watch this movie. I liked the opportunity to talk about it. And again, Star Wars is the only movie that will get me into the theater. But I don't know. I don't get to talk about movies very often, so I like these patron specials for our opportunity to go kind of off topic a little bit.
Well, join us next month as we do a patron special on Call Me By Your Name. No, we're not doing that. But maybe we will. Maybe we're just going to start doing like art house classics instead of this crap because I'm tired of it. Feels like shooting fish in a barrel. All right. Well, thank you once again for listening. We'll be back next month with another patron special. And enjoy 2018. We hope it goes well for you.